Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM in East Central Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some underwriting announcements.
The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And this hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at the Channing Murray Foundation, which is located at 1209 West Oregon in Urbana. For more information, visit www.centraliljwj.org.
Okay, thank you, Bob. We're going to be having a guest call in half past the hour. She's a member of the National Nurses Union, and she's going to be talking about a lot of issues that affect nurses in the country, as well as single-payer Medicare for All health insurance that, you know, we're one of the few countries in the world that industrialized countries that don't have that system in which everyone's insured. Okay, I'll start with the news. Interesting stuff going around all over the country and somewhat close by. In Chicago, mayoral candidate Jesus Chuy Garcia talked to a reporter Wednesday, February 25th at his campaign headquarters in Chicago. After failing to persuade a majority of Chicago voters to back his reelection bid, Mayor 1% Rahm Emanuel could face an even stiffer challenge in April against Jesus Chuy Garcia, Cook County Commissioner, who claims the backing of teachers, unions, and neighborhood residents disillusioned with Rahm Emanuel. If Jesus Chuy Garcia is going to have a shot at upsetting Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel in April runoff, he'll need to quickly solidify a coalition of minorities, union members, and progressives, reminiscent of one of Boyd, his mentor, Harold Washington, the city's first African-American mayor. Emanuel enjoys big advantages in money, having raised over $12 million. Garcia, who jumped in the race just 3 months ago, the ex-congressman and White House chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, has the backing of his former boss, President Barack Obama, who recorded ads for Emanuel and stumped for during a stop in Chicago last week. But a beaming Garcia remained optimistic Wednesday, a day after voters not only denied Emanuel an easy second term, but put several established Chicago politicians on the ropes, including a grandson of former Mayor Richard Daley. He said the election was a message from working people who believe Emanuel puts the interests of businesses and corporations and the wealthy before working people. And it's very clear there's something going on in Chicago that says that we need to go in a different direction, said Garcia, who spent the morning thanking voters at a downtown commuter train stop. And what's interesting, too, besides that, there was a lot of other alderman positions that were challenged. There were, I guess there's going to be 19 alderman election runoffs. There's also going to be, including a couple of wealthy individuals who didn't think that their challengers were going to have any kind of effect on them. In fact, Emanuel gave $1 million to all these current aldermen that support him to try to defeat their challengers, and it didn't work. What's interesting is there's 19 other races that are going to go to runoff for alderman. There was one challenger that actually won outright. His name is, if I can find it here, Carlos Rosa. He's the first openly, he's Latino, and he's the first openly gay alderman. He will not have to face a runoff because he won an absolute majority. His campaign platform includes support for single-payer health care, $15 an hour minimum wage, and into all privatized charter schools. So it'll be real interesting to see what happens come the first week of April. And plus, we got local city council and mayoral elections here in Champaign coming up here in the first week of April. So,
yeah. This is Gus, and we really need to think about this because this is something we saw happen with the Carol Ammons campaign in a more smaller city like Champaign. But now we're transforming this grassroots organizing movement to a big city like Chicago, and you have a serious denting in the two-party system happening. That even though it may not be totally annihilating it, but there's something to be said that there's a pattern going on here when people organize around a particular political group or situation, and they're able to do these types of things. So what this campaign in Chicago is doing to dismantle the obvious capitalist system with Rahm Emanuel, I mean, this is a major thing that we really need, that people, scholars and also organizers need to be studying for, looking at how this is happening, because I mean, this is really big news that a lot of people aren't really talking about, that this guy's coming in and taking Obama's boy down a couple notches. So this is pretty important.
Indeed. Okay, so
I got a story here, a continuing story.
Okay.
Once again, a little update on the United Steelworkers strike at the refineries. And it says that negotiations to settle the largest U.S. refinery strike are set to resume on March 4th. Union and lead oil company negotiators said this was yesterday on the 27th day of the work stoppage. Talks between Shell and the United Steelworkers Union broke off on February 20th after refinery owners balked at a settlement. The union then ordered the strike to expand to three more Motiva Enterprises refineries, including the nation's largest, all owned by Shell. Shell is the lead negotiator for the oil companies. There's many others involved in this strike. So it says a total of 6,550 workers are walking picket lines at 15 plants, including 12 refineries that account for one-fifth of the U.S. domestic production capacity. United Steelworkers said on union said on Friday, industry needs to bargain a fair and safe contract or see the strike expand. So it says United Steelworkers said it's seeking to retain safety provisions from previous contracts and to tighten fatigue standards for workers, as well as win back daily maintenance jobs now done by non-union contractors. Shell and the other companies have said the strike came about because of the union's insistence on replacing the non-union contractors with USW members. And so there's been a series of things happening up in the Chicago area at the BP Whiting refinery. They've had a third major flare-up in 4 days as of Thursday morning. And then they want to note also that the explosion rocked that ExxonMobil oil refinery about 20 miles south of downtown Los Angeles last week Wednesday. And this is just another reason why these striking workers are saying, you know, we got a safety is a prime thing here. Some of the workers report that they work repetitive 12-hour days for days in a row and stuff, and they're just exhausted. And so that's mainly what the strike is about.
Okay.
Safety.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to bring something up. Somebody I was talking to the other day who's a building trades worker, he was kind of confused about the steelworkers thing. Like, I think he thought maybe the steelworkers were a set of people that did some particular thing there. And there's the history of this is there used to be the oil, chemical, and atomic workers. And then in the late 90s, a lot of unions started folding in together, including the old Allied Industrial Workers in Decatur. They folded in with OCA to create PACE, mm-hmm. which I can't remember what PACE stood for now.
Yeah.
And then eventually the rubber workers folded in with the steel workers.
Yeah.
So when you hear about tire factories, it's going to be steel workers. And then PACE went in with the steel workers.
Okay.
And maybe even more, man. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the steel workers have absorbed a lot of different unions. They might think about a name change.
Yeah.
Maybe they can take that old Allied Industrial Workers name back. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
They already have a Union Hall in Decatur named that.
Okay. Gus, what do you have for us?
Yeah. Just going into what's been going on locally in terms of the bill programs, not jails movement, we're going to look at how jails are really been affecting people across the nation. There was a riot, and I don't like using that term riot, because this was an organized rebellion by
insurrection.
Prisoners. Insurrection, there rebellion. You know, when news report these things, it takes away from the agency of the oppressed when they call it a riot, because mm-hmm. it means it's spontaneous. But they actually organized this in Willacy County Correctional Center in South Texas on Friday. They protested the squalid living conditions and miserable medical care services at the for-profit prison. And this prison is located in Raymondville, Texas, less than 50 miles from the Mexican border, and all the nearly 3,000 inmates are non-citizen prisoners, and they all participated in this. Now, let me tell you about some of the conditions that they have in this place they call Tent City. They call it RITMO as a So yeah, just because, yeah, it's, so we could go Raymondville. So there are numerous reports of abuses. Roughly 200 prisoners are packed into each of the, they live in these Kevlar tents with a mere 3 feet of space separating each bed. No personal space whatsoever for the prisoners. There is no privacy between beds, and nor in the 5 bathrooms There's one bathroom, and there are 5 toilets in that one area with little space in between them. They told that the prisoners also said that there are insects and spiders that crawl through the holes of the Kevlar tents and bite them all day and night. They reported that their clothes are washed without detergent and mixed in the same laundry loads as mops and other cleaning equipment. So yeah, I mean, there's a whole list of things going on here, but we have a situation here where for-profit prisons, and we see this whenever they build them, they do not take care of them, because their main concern is that the people go to work, which is what these people did not do. The prisoners refused to go to work until the conditions are fixed, and this happened about 6 days ago. They have still not reported to work because they're saying, we are not going to assist in your capital accumulation until you fix our working conditions. And this is the kind of attitude we need to have across the country in different prisons, because prisons are for so much profit to be made in prisons in the United States. So many of them are deplorable conditions. There's no reason why they should be falling apart. There's no reason why there shouldn't be big libraries and other facilities there for the prisoners. I mean, it's just a ridiculous capitalist system to mm-hmm. make money off of them and not take care of their workers.
Now, when you say they work, what do they do? Like piecework for corporations that is farmed out to these private prisons, like making jeans or whatever.
Exactly, and that's exactly what they do too. There are a couple of those places within miles of the prison, so that's what they do. They send them out to
okay.
those areas.
I've also heard these private prisons will deny medical care to prisoners.
And that's actually the number one thing that they were striking for, is that they receive absolutely no medical care whatsoever. I mean, like, there are things that, like with the spider bites and things like that, they're not being taken care of. There's a lot of sanitary issues because the toilets are not washed and they're not maintained by staff or anything. So, I mean, they're just living in these really nasty, inhumane places, and they expect them to do these things for capital. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous.
Dave, I'm going to bring something up real quick.
Yeah.
If you are concerned about the conditions of prisoners, and I've been appalled over the last 30 years at how the sentiment towards prisoners has gone in this country. I will direct you to a local effort called Urbana-Champaign Books to Prisoners, mm-hmm. which is a program at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Company.
And company, center.
Or center.
Bite your tongue on that one.
Corporation. And I believe, you know, and friends of ours are involved in setting this up, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's a very good thing. And besides that, there is the Jail Guitar Doors organization run by a man I actually met once in the alley behind the high dive. Wayne Kramer, lead guitarist for the MC5, former cocaine prisoner in the 70s.
Now, he was part of the White Panther Party in Detroit, Ann Arbor area, wasn't he, with John Sinclair?
Yeah, actually, John Sinclair was the main organizer of that.
Okay.
Okay, and John Sinclair went to prison for 2 joints, some real draconian sentence, and basically John Lennon got him sprung by doing benefit concerts in Detroit and shaming the establishment.
And hence that became a focus of J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah. But anyway, Wayne's doing this, and you can find out about it at jailguitardoors.org. Something I'm thinking about, I don't know if they'll want to do it or not, I've got about 5 million guitar magazines in my basement.
Oh, wow.
And I was wondering, Books to Prisoners will not take magazines like that, but I was wondering if Wayne might take them, so I'm going to have to get a hold of them.
Okay, all right. And so, okay.
Oh, I got another local musically related story.
Yes,
sorry, Dave.
That's okay.
Sorry, folks. I am somewhat of a guitar geek, even though I'm just a hack player. this is a story out of Rolling Stone from May 25th, 2013 by someone named Spencer Woodman. And it's, basically, folks, there's a Guitar Center store that just opened out at the North Prospect Mall here in Champaign.
At the Strip Mall or the main mall?
The big north sprawl out there. It's in that strip mall that's in between Menards and say, the old family buffet.
Oh, okay.
You know, there. And anyway, it just opened Thursday. It's a big deal. I was real excited, even though I wasn't really wanting to shop there because I've been to this one in Peoria. All right. I had to go to the one in Peoria. I stopped by there. I was on my way to get a train at the laborers hall for a flagger card there about 3 years ago. Well, anyway, so this store just opened. Employees at Guitar Center's flagship store in Manhattan overwhelmingly voted on Friday, this was last May, to form a union of its 57 retail workers. A new bargaining unit will press for the company to improve work conditions and reversal of declining wages at the 14th Street store. The National Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, the RWDSU, orchestrated Friday's win, which marks first in a series of anticipated union votes at company stores around New York City and potentially the rest of the country. To preempt further votes to certify, Guitar Center's management has launched a messaging campaign to educate its employees at non-union stores about the supposed pitfalls of labor organizing. That's, I wonder what happened in job interviews for this store out here, if there are any questions asked about unions and such. Anyway, RDWSU began focusing on Guitar Center in late 2012 after workers approached the National Union complaining of worsening compensation, which they said came mainly in the form of falling sales commissions. Quote, "I'm earning significantly less than I used to," says Brendan Clark, 28, a pro-union sales associate at the 14th Street store. After 4 years with the company, Clark makes roughly $11 an hour. Quote, "During bad months, I've had to sell my instruments and max out credit cards to make the rent." They had been supported by musicians Steve Earle, Tom Morello, Ted Leo, and Kathleen Hannon. Kathleen Hannon is quoted, she explains that if you don't have guitars, you know, music stores and related places for young musicians to work at while they're trying to struggle, quote, "only the trust fund kids who don't have to pound the pavement all day end up being the ones in bands. This makes for a scene that isn't diverse or interesting." Okay, back to, the union has also made much of Guitar Center's owner, Bain Capital.
Oh, yes. The private Mitt Romney's
The private equity firm co-founded in 1984 by Mitt Romney. Since Bain bought the company in 2007, Guitar Center has kept its yearly revenue steady while building more stores throughout the country. That's higher expenses. Let's see. Earlier this year, Bloomberg News reported that on the whole, Guitar Center is losing money. Okay, so they're opening more stores like the one in town here, which makes it harder on the local mom and pop shops. And meanwhile, they have to oppress the people in their existing stores to finance the opening of this store. And the article is at rollingstone.com. You can just Google Guitar Center Union NYC, and it'll pop up. And you might want to go look at the comments section, which is pretty much, I think, overwhelmingly pro-union and has several comments by current and former employees of Guitar Center stores.
Okay. Bob?
We have a couple seconds just to mention Wisconsin.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Oh,
we have
yes.
to. Yes,
yeah,
we got to make time for that.
Yeah. The Wisconsin State Senate late Wednesday night voted 17-15 in favor of a right-to-work law, It says here only one Republican, a former union member for the Northern Woodlands of the state, joined all Democratic senators in voting against the anti-union law that the Republican leadership has rushed through in an extraordinary session. If the Assembly approves the bill next week and the GOP margin of 63 to 36, much larger than what's in the Senate, is almost certainly expected to do so. Governor Scott Walker has promised to sign it, given a former union stronghold the dubious distinction of becoming the 25th state to pass such legislation. So Scott Walker continues his shenanigans up there. He was at CPAC this week, and he says, if I can take on 100,000 protesters, I can do the same across the world. And that incited thousands of protesters to come back out to the state capitol the last couple of days, both opposing this recent right-to-work thing and also saying, you know, how can he equate teachers and policemen with ISIS members.
Oh, that's what he meant by taking on internationally?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. This guy's trying to run for president, obviously. Okay, we got some real quick public service announcements, and then pretty quickly here, I think our caller is going to be calling in. There'll be a community forum on Sunday, March 1st, 2015. This event's being held at Douglas Center Gym and will be the first mayoral debate in District 1 since Dan McCollum was mayor. And that's located at the corner of Grove and 5th Street. Anyway, 2:40. It starts at 2:45, community discussion on issues and priorities with facilitators Imani Bazell and Sundiata Chajua, who was on the Labor Hour a couple months ago, Gus's professor. And anyway, this so there'll be other segments here, and they'll have snacks and refreshments, so come on out to that tomorrow at 2:45 at the Douglas Center gym at the corner of Grove and 5th Street. Also let you know that the next day on Monday, the AFL-CIO Champaign County is hosting the Champaign Mayoral Candidate Forum on Monday, March 2nd from 6 to 7 p.m. at the IBEW Local 601 Union Hall, which is 3301 North Broadwalk Drive. It's way out there on North Champaign. You'll need to Google that, 3301 North Broadwalk Drive.
It's out beyond the sprawl.
Indeed, yes.
Actually, it's out by the new Olympia Drive, which is going to be one of the biggest construction projects this year. And just on the topic, this year is a big year again in construction.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my business agent yesterday, but he's afraid it's going to be like 2007 and 2008 and then 2009.
Uh-huh.
And they're working. He said their lawyer in Washington is working on getting some situation where we can take on permit people.
Yeah.
But then tell them to go to hell.
Yeah.
And not sell them cards.
Yeah. I never did like that system. Okay. And tune in this Sunday and every Sunday for Labor's Worldview TV from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6 and live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. And last but not least, the Prairie Greens, the Green Party in Champaign-Urbana, will be having Rich Whitney back in town on, Saturday, March 14th, from 1 to 2:30 at the Champaign Public Library, Room C. And, Rich Whitney's talk's gonna be Governor Rauner's proposed state budget, and basically says, Rich Whitney says we could actually address the problems of Illinois' horribly backward system of taxation. Come here, Illinois Green Party Chair Rich Whitney explained the solution in how to solve the budget and pension crisis with one simple step. So that's in a couple weeks here. We'll keep you posted on that. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break here, and then we're going to wait for our caller to call in. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on List Support Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Hey, Bob. Dream, the lingering near, in the farmer.
Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Elizabeth Lawish. I'm calling in. Is this David Johnson?
Yes, it is. Yes, welcome to the World Labor Hour. Could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please, as far as what you do?
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Lawish. I'm a public sector registered nurse in Chicago. I'm also a member of National Nurses Organizing Committee and part of National Nurses United.
Okay. And where do you work in Chicago?
I work at Strozier Hospital,
okay.
Better known as Cook County Hospital.
So okay.
The flagship hospital there.
Yes, yes, indeed. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in. I've been trying to get somebody from the National Nurses Union on the show for a while now, and I just want to say that I really admire your union. It's definitely in my top three favorite unions out there nationwide.
What's the other two, Dave?
The United Electrical Workers, and probably, probably a tie between the IWW and the communication workers. So
you're in good company.
Yeah. So
thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, yes, I wanted to call in, and I primarily wanted you to talk about issues facing nurses both in Chicago, Illinois, nationwide as well. But to begin with, I wanted to ask you a question. Didn't the nurses here in Illinois try to form a rally at the state capitol a couple weeks ago?
I don't believe it was a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
What issue was it around?
Well, just basically against Rauner and his proposals.
We're actually planning that.
You're still planning that. Okay. All right. And
that's March 11th, actually.
March 11th? Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So we got some time to promote that on the air here between now and then. So,
by the way, Dave, as long as we're talking about Springfield, do you know when Labor Lobby Day is this year?
Well, I guess that might be it, March 11th for the rally.
Well, I've been trying. Yeah, no, I'm asking the guests.
Right, but I'm saying
I'm not exactly sure. I was told that this was a day of action for a couple different organizations, and our union is actually joining on board because of what Rauner is proposing with his budget.
Yeah,
and around Right to Work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's usually a set Labor Lobby Day every year that's just a few people from their locals going with their officers to talk to whoever represents them.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the mid '90s, they ended up being these giant things with like 15,000. People showing up.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we can do something like that.
That's why I'm trying to find out when it is.
Yeah, March 11th, I guess. So
I don't know if that's Labor Lobby Day or not.
Okay. Well, anyway. Okay. So let's get to some issues here.
Sure, of course.
Tell us some of the issues that are facing the nurses that, like, say, you and at the Cook County Hospital and other nurses in Chicago are facing right now you're dealing with.
Well, I think, I'm a steward and I'm also on the bargaining team. So right now we're in contract negotiations. And have been for a couple of years now. So that's an issue that we're facing. Obviously, there's lots going on with the adjustment around the Affordable Care Act and what that means even for public sector, because it's changed all of our lives day to day in dealing with our patients. Also in the city, one of our sister hospitals that's organized with NNU, the University of Chicago Medical Center. The nurses there have actually taken a strike authorization vote. It was in late January. 95% of nurses there voted to go out on strike if necessary, and they're also in contract negotiations. So those are some of the issues as far as, labor and negotiations are concerned. And obviously the key issues continue to be things around transitioning, restructuring, a lot of that around the Affordable Care Act, which is kind of it's both a unknown quantity, and it's becoming more obvious as we go along. But I think, the key issues is really about, patient safety, patient care, and the Affordable Care Act is actually pushing a lot of patients out of the hospital faster, even in public sector, and also the idea that they'll be spending less time in inpatient hospital settings and much more time at home, with, less, qualified and licensed personnel actually, and including family members overseeing them. So those are some of the things that we're going through as far as, the transitioning that's happening within the industry, which is pretty massive, for us. It's actually the largest restructuring we've seen, I think, ever. And it's a little bit, it's frightening because you don't know what's coming down the road, but you sort of put the pieces together and it's not looking very good. And that's, one of the reasons, and I know that, you know, around the issue around single payer, we are a union that has always supported single payer by, you know, even going into the fight, which happened several years ago, or, you know, around the legislation for the Affordable Care Act, why we always stood strong with supporting single payer health care in the U.S. is the only real option, because as much as the Affordable Care Act actually makes things somewhat better, you know, what it does is actually price people out, makes it, like I said, in a public sector hospital that's always been a place where you could come to for care and be there as long as you needed to be. It's actually turning into a place where, you know, you're like every private sector hospital. You actually have to get people in and out faster and, you know, really, I think, minimize the care and push them out into, you know, places where you're not sure if they'll come back or not. And the likelihood is that they could. So
despite I was going to say, despite the Affordable Care Act, are you still encountering people with no health care?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we're a safety net hospital, and there's something that's a bit different about that. You know, people obviously have a choice to not come to our hospital, but a lot of people still do. And, you know, the Affordable Care Act does not cover undocumented immigrants, and that's a huge part of our population. And that means immigrants from all over the world. You know, I deal with patients who speak any multitude of languages on a daily basis. And so those people don't have health care, they're family members, you know. And then if you are younger people who just can't afford, you know, the cost, now that it's been, you know, the Affordable Care Act, you're going through the, you know, it's tax season, and if you don't have the app, you haven't bought health care, you actually get the fine. A lot of people think the fine, taking the hit at tax season, is better than trying to afford the health care that is, you know, for many younger people is not something that's an option, especially given the fact that jobs aren't that easy to find for people coming out of college.
Well, I can tell
those are the people we still see.
Okay.
You know?
I could tell you, too, that it's affecting older people, too. I'm 57 years old, and I cannot afford any of the premiums on the exchanges.
Right.
Not to mention, I mean, you know, $500, $600 a month, $5,000 deductibles. If I go on my wife's insurance, she'll have no paycheck virtually. So I'm one of those older people that's pretty much caught between a rock and a hard place. So, I mean, there's it's not just younger people out there. And you probably know that, but I just thought I'd let's share that with the listeners here. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So also, there's been a lot of other, I heard in Chicago, issues about certain medical related centers shutting down, you know, like for mental health centers and other centers like that. Is you've been, I'm sure, hearing about that as well. And we just covered a story about the Chicago elections up there, and it was quite encouraging news for us down here, you know, 2.5 hours away, seeing that there's actually going to have to be a runoff election with Rahm Emanuel, and also, you know, that there's 19 aldermen are going to have to run for reelection as well in the runoff. It seems like, you know, we've been covering this for a while, not just with school privatizations, but just this whole policies there about cutting back in the public sector. Privatization and stuff, has that affected the healthcare hospital sector as well?
I mean, what's happened is, as you mentioned, the city public health mental health clinics. Rahm Emanuel closed half of them, I believe, and it's been well over a year, maybe a year and a half, almost 2 years, and that has actually put a strain on the county, which is where I work. The county healthcare system, we don't have, for example, in my hospital, really any kind of capacity to take care of people who come in with, you know, all sorts of different, you know, illnesses that need to be taken care of, mental illnesses. And therefore, you know, we end up having to, you know, try to deal with those, patients as best as we can, but often we have to, you know, discharge them back out. So it's put an enormous strain. I think, on my hospital, and I'm sure the hospital system, as well as, you know, in the county system, there are cutbacks that are happening. Obviously, we no longer have, as many hospitals as we used to. This is longer term, obviously. Oak Forest Hospital used to be a hospital on the south side of Chicago. It doesn't exist anymore. It's actually going to be turned into clinics. They're talking about, you know, pulling back and some of the public health clinics in the county area actually being eliminated and then, you know, pushed back into the existing system, into the ambulatory clinic. So there's a lot of ways in which I think the public health is being, you know, attacked. It's not in the larger ways by closing 50-plus schools or closing of the mental health clinics, but I certainly believe that little by little it's being taken away. And in a place like the city of Chicago, where it's absolutely necessary to have that, and where a place like my hospital is, like I said, the flagship hospital and where people come, or it's a trauma one center, and you don't have hospitals further on the south side, it just puts more and more people who don't have, you know, real access to the resources that they need, it becomes more and more, you know, restrictive for them to be able to get the kind of health care that they need. So I imagine that there'll be more of that. And I feel like there's more and more austerity coming down the pike, especially, you know, if you think about Rahner's cuts around Medicare, that's going to be something that will obviously impact, you know, our the public health in the state as well as, you know, in the city of Chicago.
Okay. Now, I noticed that this is an issue nationwide for the National Nurses Union is the issue of patient care conditions and standards for nurses. Do you deal with that at all in Chicago?
We do. I mean, I think that there's always a fight about, you know, what standards of care for patients should be. What I mean, one of our big fights is around nurse-to-patient ratios, and being able to actually have, and this isn't to, you know, we say fewer nurses, and what we mean by that is so that we have added, you know, enough, you know, people who, enough nurses who can actually take care of patients in the way that they need to be taken care of. I think there's always issues where it's speed up. It's like, you know, the healthcare industry some years ago started going and following the auto industry in lean production. And it's really strange when you think about it because it's human beings, right? So, you know, you have a lot of people in which you literally have so many patients sometimes on a daily basis that all you're really doing is touching base with them time and time again. So a push that we're doing, and we're doing that at the state level, is legislation around nurse-to-patient ratios, which would actually codify, you know, those sorts of, you know, how many patients you would have in different areas throughout a hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, hi. My name's Bill. I brought up the lobby day thing. There seems to be different ones for different unions. I don't know, and it seems like a really big secret, too. Like, we don't want too many people to show up. But anyway, you're talking about how the parallel between nursing and the auto industry in terms of leaning down the work. Now, in the auto industry, they could go in and say, well, man, we got to compete with Japan and Korea and so on and so forth. How do the hospitals or management in your field justify that things?
Well, especially, as I said, what I, you know, started with around the Affordable Care Act, in order to be competitive, you know, now you can go to any hospital ostensibly if you can afford, you know, one of the program, one of the, you know, the coverages off the exchanges. You can go, you don't have to come to my hospital. You can go to Rush, you can go to, you know, UIC, you can go to Northwestern, and still, you know, get covered. That the reality of that is much different, I think, depending on what type of patient you are and how many, you know, diseases you actually come in with and whether or not the hospital will cover you. But the way that the hospital industry and the way you can see it play out is to say, look, I mean, in order for us to remain competitive, we have to make sure that we can get people in and out, and we need to have, you know, fewer and fewer of you, but you need to be doing the same amount of work, which is, you know, what it means about high productivity. You know, and then on top of it, you get the customer service model. You need to be like somebody who's in the retail industry, making sure you smile and greet people and, you know, rather than asking them and taking care of them, you know, in the way that you need to, sometimes in acute situations, you know, somebody's in a lot of pain. Does it matter if you smile at them, or does it matter that you give them the kind of, you know, care that they need in the immediate situation? So that's kind of how it all connects up.
Okay, so basically what they're thinking is that there's an oversupply of medical services, and so that because of that, the market says that in that condition, if you have too much supply, then prices have to go down, then that's going to drive your conditions down. And I thought in Illinois, we had a state or institution that people had to apply to in order to even expand a medical facility and get permission from. Isn't that the case?
It is, but, you know, there are ways you're supposed to, but it depends on, you know, what you do. I'm sure that there are ways around it, depending on how different, you know, for example, different hospitals might categorize, you know, if they open a new unit, what they actually do with it. Isn't it, you know, an extension of another division of, you know, the hospital or not? Those sorts of things. So, yeah, they're supposed to.
Yeah, so apparently that
always do.
Yeah, that law doesn't work very well, and perhaps it needs to be looked at and changed.
Yeah.
Also, with Cook County Hospital, aren't you the one that's the primary trauma care facility?
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, car crashes, shootings, heart attacks, and that sort of thing. So I could just imagine that would really put even more pressure on your staff and stuff. Is that correct?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're talking about what's going on universally across the industry. So
mm-hmm.
not just my hospital, right, but it's everywhere. Everywhere you go in this country, probably with the exception of California, where they have nurse-to-patient ratios, and there are, you know, ways that the industry attempts to work around that, this is the question. Staffing is always the question.
Okay.
And, you know, what it is we're the, you know, especially if you're unionized, you're the highest cost for any hospital, right? So they want to actually have fewer of you, so that they can reduce their costs as far as the labor costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the reality.
It's all a business as opposed to a public health service, right? Well, listen, Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling in. And definitely, you've got my email. So as soon as you find out more details on that March 11th rally, definitely send it to me.
Yeah, we'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, that was Ann Feeney with National Healthcare Now. I'd like to open up the phone lines now for anybody out there listening to call in and just basically tell us whatever you want to talk about. So, Gus, did you have anything else that you thought was interesting this last week?
No, I'm really excited to bring back this Scott Walker piece. You know, what I see really happening here, and then a lot of people are just I'm kind of confused why I don't see a lot of uproar about this, about him comparing the working people to terrorists. Yeah, I mean, it's getting passed over a lot because of all the stuff, other stuff going on. There's supposedly deflation going on in the U.S. economy. There's some other stuff that people are talking about. But the fact that the governor actually said that he dismantled workers, like he'll dismantle that he'll dismantle ISIS the way he dismantled the workers of the United States. I mean, that's a clear attack.
Drones.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry. Real quick. I forgot to give the phone here. It's 217-359-5483. That's 217-FLY-LIVE. Okay, guys, please.
Yeah, like I said, we really should be spreading this all over the place and organizing people around it. I mean, we have a governor that's equating terrorism to working people, the people who the 65% of Americans. He's talking to us. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, these kind of things, these are things that you organize and you get angry about and you form some type of movement around, because this guy, I mean, I don't even know how you're able to keep a position of governor of a state by calling your own people terrorists.
Yeah. Well, I was amazed too that, and he claims he has won 3 elections, which he has. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what the big mistake was the, moving the labor energy into the recall election.
Indeed. There's been a lot of criticism of that. Okay. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Paul. I wanted to know if you guys ran into this stuff about, Balanoff of SEIU and other muckety mucks who are, actually still supporting Rahm Emanuel.
I heard something about that. Yeah, it's quite unbelievable.
That's outrageous. I can't, you know. I hope they're getting a whole lot of pressure. Some rank and file people ought to go sit on his doorstep.
Yeah, indeed. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, it just shows you, unfortunately, a lot of union leaders have become such opportunists, I'm afraid, and, you know, not taking their consideration of their members' interests. And, you know, a lot of times they'll justify that, you know, and they act kind of have the mindset that they're actually a business, and that they're not, you know, they don't look at solidarity amongst working people in general and unions, you know, in particular, across all, you know, occupations and,
Yeah. Well, Balanoff's a career guy. He's been there forever. I remember seeing him speak at the public library at it was a kind of a progressive democratic organization. He's Americans
right,
for
well,
Democratic
he said some
Action.
Good things in the past, but it's awful and, now. I mean, yeah. I don't know if what's her name, Christine, is still the head. Even I'm out of the loop.
Yeah.
But that is they need to reassess because
yes, indeed.
One thing, they're probably backing the wrong side at this way if they just want to be pragmatic.
Yeah, and I heard, unfortunately, I also heard the building trades were supporting Rahm because of all the construction workers.
Well, I'm
if
not
he
real
really had that much to do
that.
With it. You know.
Are you?
No,
I mean,
unfortunately
same,
not.
You know, it's the same situation with Carol.
Mm-hmm.
They're hostile to Carol because she's hostile to some project that they think, and they got too much work right now, man.
Well, I think it goes beyond that even, Bill. With the building trades, it seems like they're always trying to suck up to the rich and powerful.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. But we are the human resources department of the AGC, the Associated General Contractors.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole other topic for a whole program. Okay, well, thank you for calling
Thanks, guys.
Right. Okay, bye.
And
okay.
You can listen to more Paul tomorrow at 5 on Windows on the World.
Okay, so yeah, Gus, that's just incredible. I mean, a governor of a state, an elected official calling union members and citizens who are trying to you know, advocate for their own you know, standard of living terrorists.
Yeah, I mean, well, I tell you. Oh, sorry.
I'm saying, has anybody seen any statements from any unions about this?
I haven't. No.
I mean, see, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. We
yeah.
need to be galvanizing.
Well, yeah. They need to be out as soon as something like this comes out.
Exactly.
And I want to thank CPAC for being early in and exposing crazy right-wingers. Whoever they elect will never get the nomination.
Can you explain to the listeners what CPAC is?
Conservative something or other, and basically this happens, and all these all the Republicans think that they have to show up, and it's an ultra-conservative wing of the Republican Party. And
so you mean neo-fascist? Basically.
Yeah, so basically it's an early indicator of what these people are willing to stoop to, you know, before they hit the more general campaigns.
Okay, we got another caller here. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Jim Iman checking in.
Okay.
The reason why Scott Walker won the recall election is because the Democratic Party threw absolutely no money at it. The Koch brothers threw everything they had.
Oh, yeah, but about folks, Jim Iman is from Wisconsin.
Yes. Also, if I remember right, there was a primary election, a Democratic primary election, in which the Democratic National Committee threw all their resources behind this mayor of Milwaukee, who wasn't much better than Scott Walker.
He's a Reagan Democrat.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and they put all this time and energy on behind somebody like that, you know, and also, you know, there's been a lot of articles I've seen on the Internet about this whole, you know, issue about how they kind of blew it up there, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Jim was... You're from Wisconsin. It seems to be a really interesting state, one that brings this progressive Republican, Robert La Follette, much more progressive than most politicians now, and also Joe McCarthy. Now, as Thomas Frank might say, what's the matter with Wisconsin?
Well, I asked myself, whatever happened to the Wisconsin fighting Bob La Follette? You know, it's like down the memory hole. You ask people in Milwaukee today, that, you know, with a socialist history of Milwaukee, and they don't know what you're talking about. It's like talking to a wall, you know? So, I mean, everything has moved so far to the right, and we have nobody but the Democratic Party to blame for that. Every time the Democratic Party moves to the right, the Republican Party has to move farther to the right.
It normalizes the right.
Yes.
Is what it does. And it makes it seem like that anybody that's not of that milieu is just out of the discursive formation, as Michel Foucault would say.
And of course, let's not forget the corporate media's role in this. I mean, they promote this 24/7.
Yeah. I don't even know why we even still call them the Democratic Party at this point. It should be the Republicans and the liberal Republicans.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
The Republican lights.
You came up with something when about these comments by Walker, and it's like, yeah. The next day or within hours, there should have been guests representing major labor and labor-related organizations, all over at least MSNBC and CNN, talking about this. But we don't have anybody. That's because the American labor movement doesn't really want to lead anything. They don't want the responsibility. They don't want to take over the economy. They want to be... I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. That is the mindset of the leadership of the American labor movement, at least on the huge national level.
Yeah. We just had a caller call in saying that there is a rally scheduled in Madison starting in about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
We can all get up there. And it's actually called
they seem to last for weeks.
Warm up the helicopter.
It's actually called by the AFL-CIO. Yeah. They're organizing this rally.
Well, good.
That starts right now.
Okay, we'll take the WEFT traffic helicopter.
Madison, Wisconsin. And there were thousands of angry constituents up there doing 2 days of protests Thursday and Friday this week in Madison. So they are getting organized up there, and partially due to the AFL-CIO, and I'm sure some of the other unions will be there represented.
Good.
But we need to also, too, outside of Wisconsin, though, where's the national fervor and the anger? Because, I can't fathom the fact that somebody has a powerful position as governor in this state that has caused 65% of the people in this country who are working class, he equated them to terrorists. I just can't fathom that. It shouldn't be a regional uproar. It should be a national uproar. There should be people, like you said, going on MSNBC. There should be people going to the newspapers. There's people on social media calling for boycotts of anything, anybody that supported Scott Walker, anybody that has even did anything with him. There should be national uproar, international. Just craziness about this, because this is a clear attack on working people, worse than anything else.
And very quickly, I don't want to just blame the Koch brothers. I don't want to talk about campaign spending, because I'm going to tell you right now, one conversation is worth 10,000 campaign commercials.
Yeah.
That is the problem. They don't have anybody. They aren't running people that can inspire us to get up and do things. I remember a time when I really felt like helping a lot of Democrats. And,
back in the 90s?
I was really disappointed last weekend. Last Sunday, I was having a conversation. A retired carpenter told me, I kind of like Scott Walker. I think he'd make a good president. And I'm like, boy, you're just not paying attention to the news out there.
They don't.
You know, this guy worked 25 years for the carpenters, and it's like, how could you say that?
Yeah,
you
know? I bet he's retired. He sits home and watches Fox News.
Yep.
And listens to Rush Limbaugh.
Yes.
In his car.
And Sean Hannity and all of that.
That's the way it is.
Because, there you go. There you
go. Because where's the local station running, I mean the local commercial station that advertises and gets listeners running Tom Hartman, you know, Mike Malloy? It's not. We get new, Stevie J starts a new radio station, sports right-wing talk.
Yeah.
A new FM station comes on in Decatur, Union Town.
It's lower level right wing. I mean, these are people you never heard of national level.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting.
And some people say this is what the listeners want to hear. No. But you know what? That is our friend Eric Sizemore said, no, the radio stations don't care what the listeners want to hear. They're more concerned with what their advertisers want to hear.
That's right. Exactly. Because the listeners are the product, but the advertisers are the customers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you don't have that many listeners, if you're saying what these people want to hear, that's just it. Yeah, Rush Limbaugh, he can get a lot of advertisers and get a lot of stations because he's saying what they want to hear generally. But lately, he's been getting some heat on it but the problem is it's caused companies not to advertise on talk radio in general.
Yeah.
Not just Rush Limbaugh, not just right-wing talk radio. It's hurting people like Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy, Norman Goldman. And by the way, you can stream these people easily with TuneIn on your phone. You can even get WCPT on a good day on your car radio. That's 820 FM. Now, they're liberal. I mean, they're not radical revolutionary anti-capitalist, but I mean, they're a hell of a lot better and they got some better ideas than.
Yeah, yeah.
WCPT is what, Chicago Progressive Talk?
I believe that is. And it is owned by a guy who's worth about $500 million, who's a Democratic activist, who drives a car just like the one that I just traded in last week.
Okay. So any last words, Gus?
Oh, that's it, man. I mean, the thing is that I know I'm going to spend the day talking about this with people because I can't really go forward knowing that there's not something going on nationally. You know, there needs to be something organized. I'm glad the AFL-CIO is doing something in Wisconsin, but I need to be hearing things from the South, from the West Coast, from the East Coast. I mean, the New England area. I mean, we need to be hearing things all over the place. Where's the president at on this? The fact that, you know, he talks a lot about the majority people and wanting to help workers and the middle class and all this other mess. But I want to hear something about what Scott Walker's comments say. He needs to say something today,
President,
immediately.
Probably looking for that pair of shoes. He was.
They're way back in the closet.
Okay. He's waiting.
Yeah, and let's talk about some future program. The state of Michigan, in particular, the Detroit area. I mean, how it's become a corporate dictatorship, and not to mention what I heard a figure the other day, Gus. I don't know if this is accurate or not. Maybe you know that 90% of African Americans in the state of Michigan are now disenfranchised.
Yeah. I mean that's exactly what's happened. I mean, that state has been just ravaged by neoliberal capitalism and the stuff that's been happening both locally and state and that government. I mean, it's just been ravaged. I mean, just going, driving through Detroit now compared to about 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is really a sight that people need to see. I can't even tell you about it. You actually have to drive through Detroit and see what capital has done to that city and just destroyed it.
Yeah, and the mayor and the city council are no longer elected by the people. They're appointed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the most ridiculous
by the governor's manager or whatever it is. Let listeners know, I've been trying for a while now to get somebody on the ground in Detroit. I haven't had any success, but I'm going to keep trying. Because we definitely need to cover this because, man, I'll tell you what, Detroit is what the corporate America wants our future to be.
Exactly.
And it's really frightening.
Feudalism.
Yes, corporate feudalism. Yep. Okay, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on Listen to Spring Community Radio Station, WFT. Yes?
Hey, we have the mandatory Sieg Heil! Heil Ronner!
All right, Bill. That's the World Labor Hour, and till next week, tune in to Union Edge from 12 to 1. And in the meantime, till next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.